here. Today we move forward and let's take a look at though we did also the Radak. We up to the Malbum. That is where we're up to Pasuk Tezvav in the Malbum. And I don't believe there is a Tezvav. It just goes right into Pasuk Tezayin, one short Malbum on page 421. Vayisu es yoyne vayatilu el hayom perishu chazal sheitilu techila kitzas kufa. This is everyone on their own told me this medrash.
Right.
Where they dipped him like Pesach, shtepa shubchol elos eirunu matbilin afilu pamachas halayla zeh shtepa amin. So they dipped him. They did a test. They dipped him once and the water subsided. Sheitilu techila kitzas kufa. Vishasak hayom. When they picked him up, Chozar Hasar v'zeromas b'masha kosa v'yisu v'yatiluhu sheloi hitiluhu tekef. They did not throw him into the yam immediately. Rak nosu oisoy techila biyodayim. They first lifted him up. Yodav yasut nisyoinois rabois. Many tests to determine if it's really true
you have to get a valid sample.
Exactly. They did not throw him into the yam without doing a test. The quality of the sar, the storm, the intensity of the storm. Rak al aniya zois only on this ship. The imi ribui hagarolais, or they had done multiple tests, a lottery, shakulam naflu al yona, the imi hodoas atzmo, his confession, his admission, his volunteering to be thrown into the yam, the imin han nisayon ho acharon shakul eis, shetovlu oisobayom, omar mizapo, every time they dipped him, the yam stopped. So he mentions over here four different signals, four different indicators that Yonah is the one who is responsible. Number one, it's only this ship that is suffering. All of the other ships in the vicinity did not suffer turbulence. Number two, all of the Garolais fell on Yonah. Number three, they dipped him into the water. And number four, what was the fourth one I said? The Echus Hasar, only on this ship. The Garola is only three. He admitted. That's number four. He confessed. He admitted, that's me. He confessed. I am the sinner. And number four, they dipped him into the water. So a total of four. The Ramam over here really summarized a lot that we have learned before. There were four indicators that Yonah was responsible, or that this was something supernatural. This was not just a random event. There was a unique hashkocha pratis. We are the only ship that has been singled out for destruction in this passageway in the yam. Number two, Yonah himself confesses he is the one that is responsible. Number three, the goyrel. And number four, they dipped him into the water. And when they dipped him into the water, the storm stopped. When they pulled him back in, the storm resumed. Four indicators that indeed Yonah, there's something that is special, and therefore Yonah is the one that has to be cast into the yam. Let's now...
Four indicators.
It doesn't say they dipped him four times. I just said there were four different indications that this was the Yad Hashem. Number one, this was the only ship that suffered turbulence in the sea. Number two, the Goyrolois all landed on Yonah every single time. Number three is when they dipped him into the water subsided. When they picked him up, the storm resumed. And number four, he admitted, confession. What?
Volunteered.
It is I that is responsible for this storm. So the combination of these four different indicators all point in one direction, that they are allowed and they should throw him into the yam to save themselves.
So that would the point that if a person confesses or something says, I did it, he should be believed right forward. If there is no other.
All right, so you are right. Okay, you ain't other mesim atzmoy rasha. Let's say a person under the chuppah There are many stories like this. I don't know all the details, but there are stories where under the chuppah, the mother of the bride, she whispers to the Masader Kiddushin, I just want to let you know that my daughter under the chuppah is a mamzer. Is a mamzer. I was mezaneh. This fine young girl under the chuppah that's about to marry this fine young man, you should know her husband, the father, is not here today. The father is somewhere else. And the man that appears to be the father of the bride is not the father. Because I had an affair and I got pregnant from another man. My husband does not know this. He thinks it's his daughter. But I'm telling you the way it is. And that means she was an Ashes Ish, a married woman who has relations with another man. The child has the status of a mamzer. A mamzer is not allowed to marry a Yisrael. So she says this to the, I think I have this with Rav Moshe Feinstein. They have probably more than once. Under the chuppah, and she tells Rabbi Feinstein, well, you know that I want to confess that my child is a mamzer. So Rav Moshe says, thank you very much. Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, Borei Pri Hagafen, and we'll proceed with the wedding as planned. Ein Adam Mesim Atzmai Rasha. So the question over here is, you're asking, is of Yon over here says, I am the sinner, and therefore, if I'm the cause of this whole event, you're all going to die, unless you do something, and you kill me, you throw me into the Yon. How is Yon allowed to make himself into a Rasha? Good question. In fact, I have over here,
so there's corroboration.
Oh, so exactly. So over here, that's why the Malbim really is alluding to this, is that you need more indicators. You have another three factors that together, each one by itself may not be enough. We have a goyrel. We have the fact that this ship is singled out in an unusual way. It's not a coincidence. It's not just a coincidence over here that we're caught at a storm. Everyone else doesn't have a problem. Only our ship has a problem. So that means there is someone on this ship that is a troublemaker. And the last thing is they dipped him in the water. So you're right, each one by itself would not be sufficient, but together the combination allows us to take action that under ordinary circumstances we would not be permitted to do. This, you should know, is the art of a posek. Why do you need a posek, Rabbi Yisrael? What do you need a posek for? Ask your child to a computer. Okay, today there's AI, artificial intelligence. It's a big, big deal today. Okay, all of the research today is going into AI. They have supercomputers. They know how to learn. And to damel le'inyin. So why do you need to go to a posik? So one of the answers is, why you still need posikim, at least until the artificial intelligence gets more intelligent, is a posik has the power to combine together multiple leniencies to result in a decision of heter. In other words, you go to a rough. What?
Issa too, because
at the
wedding, at the chuppah, there was no bezin to say that he was a mamzer. You can't make another person a mamzer just because you whispered to Rabbi Isha.
Well, there are certain rules. I don't know the rules, but generally,
he did it because once he did it, you know, she has a chesed.
Okay, there. At that moment in time when the woman made this confession, okay, I don't know the halachas, I don't know the details, but generally when you go to a rav and you ask Rav a shayla, there's one issue. I have one issue. This is the question: am I permitted to eat this? Yes or no? So the rule is, I can't tell you that it's asur 100%, but the custom is, the minug is to be machmir. That is what we do. The oilam does not eat this in this situation. It's not technically awesome. If you were to do it, no one's going to say that you chayv malchus. No one's going to say that you're a bad person. You pasul le'edus. There aren't going to be any consequences. But if you're coming to ask the shayla, I'm telling you, we don't do this. It's not in the spirit of the law. Okay? But Rabbi, there's another consideration. So that consideration also, if that in and of itself, the halacha would be, it's not asur, but we don't do it. There's another consideration, and that by itself is the same rule. Now, let's combine all of these three reasons together. There are three unique considerations coming together, converging in this particular she'ela. Each one presents a different avenue, a different reason why the event, the thing that we wish to do, the question, we want it to be permitted. That's why we're coming to ask the question. Each reason in and of itself would not be sufficient. But now that they converge together, it's called a sniff, like in Kleenex. A sniff, lehetera, we can combine all of these things together to be matter. That's why you still need human intelligence. Because the computer will spit out osser, osser, osser. But a rabbi has the ability to say that we can combine three different sinifim, three different branches, we can combine them, that in this instance, it should be mutter. If you look at the she'elos u'tshuvos, the shut, okay, shut is Rosh Hashanah, she'elos u'tshuvos, that's a big, go with any library, any yeshiva, you have a section on, you know, Chumash, the Tanakh, you have a section on Musar, you have a section on the Talmud, and then you have the Rishonim, you have the Achronim, and then you have a big, big section called she'elos u'tshuvos. Okay, from all the Gedolei Yisrael questions that were asked and their answers. And the answers all do the same thing. Either they say it's outright osur, outright mutter, or most of them is written that this is a very complicated question and there are many, many factors that are coming together. Each factor in and of itself, we know what the halacha is. But in this situation, we can combine multiple factors either to prohibit something or to permit something. That's basically the gist, the theme of all of the she'elos u'tshuvos, combining different leniencies or different elements of chumrah. It's mutter. Why is it aser? It's mutter. Well, in this case, there are other factors. There are many different factors coming together. That's why, in this case, the posuk feels that the halacha should be that it's aser, because there are many things that are coming together. You can't be so lenient when there are so many things working against you. So here, in the world of Hashkafa, we have in the Malbim exactly the same thing. Each one of these indicators would not be sufficient to take the life of Yonah, but when we combine all three of these things, all three together, then we can be matter. This is the.
Rabbi was answered your question plus above.
Yeah.
The Rav Choyvel went down to talk to Yonah. The captain of a ship.
The Choyvel. That's a whole different. The Rav Choyvel. We discussed that. Who's the Choyvel?
No,
he's not a Malach. He's not an Ish. He's the Rav Choyvel. He was the Rav. The Rav.
So that's it.
Well, in today's world, in today's modern world, you go on a plane, go on El Al. Do you know the captain the pilot of the plane has more power over your life than the president of the United States? Right. Legally. I'm talking about legally.
Yeah. He can conduct a marriage up there.
He can, yeah, right. There are things that he can do that no one can do. It's amazing. You know, you would say, could you make the bracha, can you make a bracha on him, It's not such a simple answer. The minig is that they stand there when you leave the plane. The captain stands there. They're supposed to. A lot of them are lazy. They don't want to do it anymore. But they stand there and they're supposed to, you know, say goodbye to everyone. They're not there to greet you. They're there to say goodbye to you. Do you know how much power that man had when the plane was on the air? Why don't you make a bracha on him? Shenosan lichvoidoi lebosar vidam. This bracha is made on a king. Why do you make it on a king? Because he has the power of life and death. He can decide miyichye umiyomos. Do you make this bracha on the president of the United States? Good question. Not so simple. Mitzad Echad is a democracy, so he can't directly take anyone's life unless they have committed a crime, but his power of office does give him power to indirectly kill anyone he wants. There are things that a president of the United States can do to put people in harm's way where it's very likely they will die. Okay, you have to. He can declare war, and he can force you. He can call and make a draft and force you up to war, and he can make executive order that your division has to go out to the front lines. You can construct case. Go bring in some lawyers here. Some what are they called? No, there's certain types of lawyers that specialize in presidential law. Okay, presidential law.
Constitutional,
but war, not just a specialty, also a law that relates to the President of the United States. Okay, the constitutional law, whatever it is, executive powers, and can probably construct for you a situation where, according to the law, okay, your wife, according to the law, the President of the United States can do something right now, this moment, that will result in the death of another of any citizen he wants in this country. Okay, there's a technique. If he wants someone dead, he can do it, and he's free. He's it's his power. So should that not be enough to make upon the President of the United States the bracha of shenosa lichvoidoy lebosa v'dam? So many of the people that will argue the answer is yes. You can make a bracha on the President of the United States, even though he can't just go summarily execute someone, but he has enough power to do it quick enough, indirectly, or whatever it is, however, so that should be sufficient. And some say, no, it's not enough. And then some want to argue that there are other elements that are necessary in order to make the bracha. There has to be a certain yira, a certain yiras haroimimus. Malchus, by definition, means you're afraid. And today there is no fear. Today society is set up in such a way where no one's afraid. You can say on the radio the most incredible things, like you can't even imagine what people say when you hear people say on the radio what goes on. So is that called malchus to the degree where you can make a bracha b'shem malchus baruch atah Hashem elokim melech olam shenosa nechvod lebos v'dam? So many poskim will say no. Who grappled with this issue? The OU grapples with, because the OU, they meet with, the OU, they're Orthodox, they're religious, very, very firm people, people who work in the OU. Other organizations are not so, they're not, the Haredim don't even meet with the President, so it's not nogea then. The OU, they lobby, the Aguda, they meet with the President. They do, they every once in a while, they have opportunities. And when they meet, the question is always presented, do we make the bracha? And the end, the dilemma, the very big dilemma. And throughout the ages, there's always been different opinions by different rabbanim. And the OU, generally, I remember about 15 years ago, I know someone who went to see the President, Bush W. They were in the office with him for over an hour, and they had a big debate in the OU. He told me, all the poskim there in the OU, should they make the bracha, should they not make the bracha? And the psak halacha was not to make the bracha.
They did make it.
That's a shahakol. That's a different bracha. That's not the bracha. The bracha of shahakol is not a bracha. The Chazal say shenosan lechvoide lebos avedam. I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. So they do. I think they do that. They do that. So I think it says they did. They said that. It said b'loshem malchus. That's a cop out. Right.
That's
Baruch Hashem, we don't make the bracha. Because if we would make the bracha, we'd be in a lot of trouble. There'd be absolute power corrupts absolutely. So Baruch Hashem, we don't make the bracha. Rabbi Reisman once said in Shir Mitzvah Shabbos, he said something very, I thought, very profound. He said that they say in the yeshiva, this is before my time, so probably you can appreciate this much. My father explained this to me in a much more detail. He said that before Nixon, we made the bracha. After Nixon, there's no more bracha. In other words, before my time, before Nixon, anyone that was not living before Nixon was and understood the President of the United States had what was called kvod malchus. Technically, can he kill someone? Well, that's a topic of discussion. He could definitely prevent someone from dying. Someone who's on death row, he has the power of life. That he has. Power of death, I just explained to you, indirectly he does. Indirectly he has power of death. Indirect. That's a question. Is that enough? Many hold it is enough. But there's another element which many poskim demand, and that is something called kivod malchus, dignity. Until Nixon, disgraced the presidency of the United States, a president was a president. After Nixon, the scandal, Watergate, and what the circus that went on in the media, it damaged the fiber of Malchus, of covered Malchus. And you can imagine what happened with Clinton, okay? Just go. What happened there with Clinton, how that really took it to a new low. And some will argue that Obama took it even lower in a certain way, even though he was a very dignified president in one respect. Okay, can't argue with that. He's clean. 8 years, he never heard somebody choishet with him with a woman. It's pretty good. It's pretty good, okay? That's pretty, pretty good. That's a very great zuchus for this country. 8 years went by, and no one ever said boo. It's a tremendous zuchus, okay? You can't argue with that. I'm sorry. And, what? Okay, exactly. And now you want to talk about Kavoid Malchus in our generation. Exactly. Don't even take me there. I don't want to give you some examples. But okay, so today, forget it. Today, if you are of the opinion that there's an element of a kavod that is necessary to make a bracha, forget it. Forget it. If you want to say what?
Even without shame and malchus, you can't make the bracha.
Wow, that's a good line. Okay, very good.
He's hung by the tongue.
You hear what he just said? It's good what he said. Torah took us to a madrega that you can't make the bracha even without shame and malchus.
He's hung by
the tongue. You hear what he just said? That's very deep. Okay, but in any event, going back to our topic over here, I don't even remember how we got into this.
With the OU, if food is roi, the melech, a certain bracha, if you have to make a bracha, something, if the food is roi, the melech.
Oh, I mean, al shulchan melachim.
Right.
That's a sugya of bishul akum.
Right.
Bishul akum, state dinner.
Right. So they know what he eats.
State dinner, I think, even ad hayoyim hazeh, they don't serve potato chips at a state dinner.
What did your cousin do in that?
Oh, very good. So what did my cousin do? He did something very interesting. He didn't make a bracha. No, he didn't make a bracha.
Did he make it in
the... It's on YouTube. YouTube. No, the question was Hanukkah. It was not Hanukkah. It was before Hanukkah. So he could not make a bracha on the menorah. He could not make a bracha. And so what he did was he made a shachianu. He didn't make a bracha on the president. He made a shachianu b'shem malchus. It was not Hanukkah. And he said, Baruch atah Elokeinu. He didn't say Hashem's name.
He faked it.
He faked it on live television. He faked it. The bracha of L'halik Ner Shel Hanukkah and Sha'asa Nisim. He faked it. He didn't say Hashem's name. No embarrassment. He said, I think he even explained to him. He even said, and then he said, but we will make for real the Shechianu. We're not making really. Go watch it. It's awesome. It's really awesome to watch this. And he said, it's last year, not this year.
Yeah.
And he said, we're making the Shechianu on the announcement that you are moving the embassy to Yerushalayim. And that calls for a halachic shechianu. We're allowed to make al pi halacha a shechianu on the besoira toiv, on the good news that you have announced that the embassy will now be officially in Yerushalayim. And he proceeded to make a shechianu. I spoke to his father. I speak to his parents very often. Elio Soloveitchik is one. He's the Rosh Yeshiva of Landers College. He is the son of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. He is an awesome Talmud Chacham beyond our wildest dreams. There's nothing he doesn't know. It's tremendous. He signs the smicha. He gives the smicha, and he signs the smicha in Landers College. So I was talking to him about this. So he said to me that his son, Meir Yaakov, he called him up, and they had a very, very long conversation. What inside information here? A very long conversation what he was to do when he was going to meet with the president. And he spoke with him a very, very long, from the conversation, it was very clear to me that his father, my uncle, Elio, is not telling him what to do. He's an adult. Meir Yaakov, Rabbi Meir Yaakov Soloveitchik is his own man. He's an adult. He's the rabbi of the Spanish Portuguese synagogue. He leads one of the most successful departments in YU, some type of department where Western civilization, Western thought, whatever it's about. He has a position, a very high position in YU, and I have no doubt he'll be either the next, he'll be probably the next president of YU, or maybe the president. He could have been the president now. From what I understand, he could have been the president. He was offered to run as a serious candidate to be the president. Now they have, who's the president now?
Berman.
He's too right-wing. Berman. So he could have been the president if he wanted to go, and for sure he'll be the next president. You know, today the style is, like every 5 years, there's a new president. It's not like the olden days, where the president, Lamb, and Belkin, they're president for 50 years. That's not the way it is today. Today, a president in the university, the style is, you do a term, or two terms, 5 years, 10 years, and that's it. That's the sauce. So I have no doubt in my mind he'll be the president of YU at some point in time, for sure. And so he's his own man, and his father is not telling him what to do. His father, I have no doubt, if he was invited to be, he would do it very differently. I have no doubt in my mind, because comes from a different background. But his son Meir Yaakov is a different type of person. But he had a halachic conversation, and this was the maskana. And his father gave him reshus. His father says that he believes that what he's doing is halachically correct. I mean, there are different opinions on this matter, but it's not a bracha levatola. He's not going to, his father would, if his father felt it would have been a bracha levatola, he would have told him not even to do that. They discussed all the various scenarios, all the different things that they can do. It's obviously a very delicate situation when you're going in front of the whole world and you're greeting the President of the United States, and you don't want to be chil Hashem, and you don't want to antagonize anyone too much. And he did it. I thought it was, I was blown away. I watched it 10 times last year in Hanukkah, what he did, it was how he conducted himself. It was the whole event. And if anyone here didn't see it, I can't imagine anyone here didn't see it, you should go back and you should definitely look it up. I'm sure you can find it very, very easily. In fact, they made it into a very big joke how Trump, he says, Rabbi Solov, how he said his name. It's very, very funny how he tried to pronounce his name Soloveitchik. Soloveitchik. And
he said he practiced.
He was looking on with glee. And Ivanka and Jared were standing right there with their children. And all of the Reform and Conservative Jews were going out of their mind. They were turning colors. The Imamish turning colors. How could this be? It's like you can see, you can feel it, and you can feel it. How could this be? These people were supposed to not exist anymore. These Orthodox Jews. How could it be that? How could it, they? Here he is, a Soloveitchik, a Ben Achaben from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. He's here in the White House, in the President of the United States, and he's. And he's acting in such a dignified, respected, with such dignity and kavod, and he's doing everything according to the halacha, and he's appreciated.
That's what they would
know. It's like it totally blew them away. It shook them to the core, and every argument they made why we have to abandon in modern times our religious beliefs and become a member of the modern world was like washed down the sink and scrubbed away in a way that was just not to be believed. That's how I felt when I saw this event take place last year, Hanukkah. It was really stunning to see. All right, now going further here, back to our part. So we did over here the Malbim tells over here the sniff. We discussed this. Four different factors had to come together in order to permit this event. Now, before we go further, I really want to come back to this next week because I have here a sefer I was just always planning to learn, and I just didn't get a chance to spend time. A very, very good choshev sefer on Yonah, and he has a lot of more material which I want to discuss. I need to properly prepare it, so we're going to come back maybe next week. But I just want to maybe finish up a few more small thoughts. First of all, there is a chaymas hanach. So let's do that right away. The chaymas hanach is. Let's see. Pasuk Tezvav. Let's do Pasuk Tezvav. The other one we did already. Let's see Pasuk Tezvav. Vayisu es Yonah vayitiluhu el hayam bein kulam. Okay, so it says here. He is here one word. Okay, it says here, and he's coming to discuss the halakhic problem of murder. How, after everything is said and done, even though there are four indicators that Yonah should indeed be thrown into the Yam, still in all, no one wanted to be the bad guy. So what did they do? They all did it together. Like today, in modern times, a firing squad. Why is there a firing squad? Because each one can, no one should live the rest of their life with a guilty conscience that it was they who pulled the trigger. When many people are doing it at the same time, so each one can say, it was the other guy who killed, not me. So here as well, Ben Kulam, V'chos V'rambam, Zal, Perek Dal D'Rotzeach, D'Shnayim, if in Halacha, two people together push a person off the roof, D'Shnayim, Shedichafuhu, they push a person, O Kivoshuhu, L'Soch HaMayim B'Turim. If two people together execute someone, Shnayim Shasuhu, they are exempt from Misas Bezdin, because no one person can we say was the one who killed him. The Hatam the Chassidus in the pasuk Kol Nefesh Adam Ad Sheye Echad Shaharag Kol Hanefesh. It's a drasha. Kol Nefesh Adam. The Gemara's drasha is Kol. One person has to be responsible for taking away the entire neshama. Kol Nefesh. If one person did not take away the entire neshama, only 50% of the neshama, because he was assisted by someone else, then there is no chiyuv misa. I think is this parasha? This parasha, this pasuk called Nefesh Adam, might be actually this week's parasha. Actually, maybe it was last week's parasha. It was either last week's parasha, last week, and the last week's parasha. Actually, Echad Shargis Kol Nefesh. V'zeu Shama Lachem Yoina, Seuni, lift me up, v'hatiluni, bein kulchem, amongst all of you. Ach zehu lipoter mimisas bezin. So here is a very, very beautiful point that he makes. All of this lumdis of everyone throwing him into the sea together only takes away a technicality that they're not going to be able to be executed or punished by a bezin. But it does not take away the fact that they indeed killed him. So if you will prove and you will present an argument that they are not allowed to kill him, and instead it would be better they all die, they all perish, the boat sinks and they all die, then they should still, for the rest of their lives, live with a guilty conscience. So a firing squad, if you're a religious person, it doesn't make a difference. Because you were a partner. If you don't want to be the only one that's going to kill someone, because you don't want to pin it on yourself, then what are you really accomplishing when you're part of a team? You are still a part, you are part of a group that took someone else's life. Technically, you can't blame me, okay? You can't trace it to me, but if you're a religious person, you know that you were a partner in this event. And that's what he says over here, Aval chayav misa b'dei shamayim, k'mo shekosef harav dino dechaye, like the shekosef harav, Rav refers to the Rambam, in Dina de Chayve Lavin Kuf Samach Gimel, or I'm not sure who he's referring to over here. Lachain Vayikru El Hashem Vayomru Al No Noivda Benefesh. That's why they will misfollow. Let us not be held accountable. Ha'ish Benefesh Daika. Dibidi Shamayim Chayev Al Kol Duhu Nefesh. Benefesh. Another insight into why it says here this expression, let us not be guilty, binefesh. Each person on this ship who would participate in killing Yonah, in throwing him overboard, would have a chelik in the binefesh, a fraction of that neshama. And therefore, al kol duhu nefesh, shahacha huli, shahacha, ha chahu li natzel kulanu v'roim anu shezer ritzoncha. They were mispalel that we see over here that we really should not be guilty because we have four indicators. But just in case, we're being mispalel, and that's why we're using the word bi nefesh. You have to also appreciate that in the Gemara, I don't remember where the Gemara is. The Gemara talks about maybe, I think it's Masechta Sanhedrin, where the Gemara has a discussion where there was a dayan who was authorized to make a decision in halacha, and he said, I do not want to be the only one that decides this halacha, even though in this situation I'm allowed to. He was a dayan mumche. When a person is known to be an expert, then generally you have a right to decide in many matters to paskin alone. But he said to his companions, I want you to join me and also express your opinion on this halachic decision. And then he says something very funny. He says, why? I want some of you to share to take some splinters out of the beam. In other words, it's a metaphor. Yeah. My decision is like a piece of wood. So if it turns out that I'm wrong, so I'm going to bear the weight. I have to bear the entire piece of wood. The piece of wood weighs 10 pounds. So that means in the next world, I'm going to go to Gehenim, and they're going to give me a punishment that's worth equal to 10 pounds of wood. Okay, it's a metaphor. But if I bring onto this Bezdin 10 people, and we have the decision comes forth, there are 10 people that sign off on this decision, and it turns out we're all wrong. So when I go to Gehenim, I'm not going to have to suffer 10 pounds worth of wood. I'll only have to suffer 1 pound worth of wood. So therefore, let's splinter the beam into 10 pieces. So each person, in case they're wrong, will only have to suffer the consequences of share the consequence of only a fraction of the punishment that will be given to someone who makes a poor decision. So you see a precedent in halacha. You see such a thing that when it comes to a piske halacha, when it comes to a dayan at times is entitled to make a decision all by himself. A dayan mumche. And even though the dayan mumche knows that he is right, at least he thinks that he's right, he wants other people to participate, not because he's humble. It's not a matter of humility. Oh, I don't want to be, the landmark decision. Okay, the landmark decision of Roe versus Wade. I don't want to be, every student in public school for the rest of their lives will remember me, the big judge, who's the one that decided Roe versus Wade. COVID, right? Oh, I'm a humble, me'oid, me'oid, havish, shval ruach. I'm a humble person. So let me go, and we'll have another 9 judges sit and they'll sign. So the kids in public school, they don't remember anyone. Okay, if you have to memorize the one judge they can memorize. They're going to be 10 judges to memorize. The teacher will say, forget it. Mochaloch, mochaloch, it's not going to be on the test. They all remember. Is that the reason why the judge is because I'm humble? That's not the reason why the judge says, you know what, bring in another 9 judges. You know why? Because I'm a religious person. Because maybe this landmark decision that I'm about to issue is not correct. And the Ribbono Shel Olam will hold me accountable. And boy, will I suffer. So you know what? If I allow other people into my company, and allow them to participate in also expressing their independent opinion, and if they all come to the same opinion, then guess what? If it turns out that we're wrong, I will not have to suffer the full dosage of punishment for bringing the Chorban to this world. And we'll all have to share it with me. So let's take the beam and splinter it into many, many pieces. It is interesting. That's true. That's a piece of Gemara. Okay, so here are these people. Is you would expect once now that the Chidah is opening up this matter, is telling us that we want to go and allow more judges, Kulam, everyone on the ship together is going to participate. Wouldn't that be what you expect? That's what the Chidush should say. The reason why they want everyone to do this together, they realize that if that when it comes, that when it comes to the question that everyone is not so sure they're doing the right thing, so therefore we will go and we will lighten the load of punishment in case we are wrong. It's not what it says. He says here, they're not concerned about the next world. They're concerned about this world. They're concerned what's going to happen. What's going to happen when they come back to dry land? What's going to happen when they come back to dry land? And I don't know who's in charge. The authorities are going to look at the manifest and say 71 people got on the ship. Only 70 got off. Where is Mr. 71? And when we start telling them what happened, they're going to put us on trial. I don't want to be executed if 70 people put this person to death, so therefore they can't do anything to anyone. It's not a religious... The Chidah somehow is watering down why the people here are deciding to kill, to throw Yonah in the sea together. It's not because they want to reduce the degree of punishment, like it says in the Gemara, but rather they just want to get away with it. Now that's very interesting, because doesn't the pasuk over here say that they feared Hashem? Well, I guess that didn't come to that madrega of the ultimate fear of Yeru HaNashim Es Hashem Me'oid took place only after they threw him into the water. At this point in time, they still did not come yet to that madrega. So here is more just of a practical matter. We don't want to sit in prison the rest of our lives or be killed. So therefore, we'll do it together. By doing it together, that way we'll be able to deflect the blame, responsibility, and we will live another day. That's pretty much what he says. He just makes this into a practical matter.
I once heard it almost in the opposite way. Anla with Bathsheba or Rebbe, he was very sick. He said, whenever you smile on something, it's supposed to include others. It shouldn't only be for me.
Okay, but that's a different Indian. That's the Til Sibo. You found it's all for the Rabbin. Besoch Sha'ar. Besoch Sha'ar Chole Yisrael. Because when you mispal for the Tzibur, you misspell for many people, so then the zuchus of the tzibur is more powerful. That's more of an in of tzila. Here it's a matter. Here we're discussing more of a matter of taking responsibility for what is about to happen. All right, that is the chaimus anoch. Okay, that concludes. Now there is one other thing that I wanted to mention. Okay, there are no mamori chazal. There are other ideas. We'll come back to next week. But before we go to next week, I want to mention one other thing, and that is this is pasuk is often cited as a source for Chaye Sha'a. Okay, that's a very, very complex topic. What does it mean, the chashivus of living even one more moment? Not to accelerate death. This is a very big problem in modern times. In modern times, by the Goyim, there's a very big debate, and there are different techniques, different methods, and every hospital is different, of what a hospital does to accelerate the death of a terminally ill patient. Okay, so we have a person that's terminally ill, and he's in a coma, and he's going to die. That's the fact. The question is, will he die in 3 days, or will he die today? Or will he die in 2 days? Every day in the hospital is money. Who is paying for a stay in the hospital? Insurance only covers that much. The hospital has to... Many situations, they have terminally ill people, they don't have the best insurance, and they have whatever they have, and that's the way it is. The hospital has to make up the difference. They get a lot from the insurance or whatever they get from the government, and they have to make it up. If they can have this person die even a day earlier, it makes a difference to them. It's all about money. So the way it is, go read the magazines, all about money. So what do they want to do? They instruct the doctors, if this guy is on morphine, just give him a little more morphine. He's anyway on morphine. And when you make your rounds, and this fellow is in a coma, and he's terminally ill, and his blood pressure is dropping, So if you do nothing, if you maintain the status quo, the statistics are, it will take him 3-4 days to die. If he'll just turn the knob just a little bit more, no one's going to know the difference, right? And, you know, according to the books, there's a range of how much morphine you can give a person. So just put it on the high end, and that way he'll die today or tomorrow. Accelerating death. So, is this permitted? Now, by the Goyim, money is an issue. They want the hospital wants. And by a non-Jewish family, by Goyim, or by even Jews that are not religious, why not? Don't torture us. Why do we have to suffer agony, sit here in the hospital and watch this pathetic situation? He's anyway going to die. He's gone. He's a goner. So just, let's get it over with. Okay, these are things that happen literally every single day when they give medicine to terminally ill people. I saw my own eyes, I saw this, unfortunately, in the best hospitals. I saw a lot of stories I could tell you, I saw my own eyes. So you could really argue, you can't judge. There's one thing I can tell you from my experience. I have very little experience, Baruch Hashem, I don't want to know from this, but unfortunately I saw some things. And, you know, if you never ever saw this, your own eyes, and you read about it in a magazine, and you're brought up as a Shomer Torah mitzvahs, and you learn all the Gemaras, Chayei Shah. So right away you'll say they're all a bunch of murderers. They're a bunch of Reitzchim. When you're in the hospital for weeks and you see it from their end, you don't say that. There's a lot of sympathy that they're right. Okay, maybe it sounds shocking what I'm saying, is that they're terminally ill patients, so there is something to it, is that these people, that they're extremely ill, their organs are totally not functioning, it's just a matter of a day or two, and you're not doing anything directly, it's all indirect. There is a lot of logic and sense behind Chochma Bo'amim, Tamin. So, question is it really wrong? Is it really? I'm not talking about DNR. I'm not talking about the person dies and now we're going to do heroic measures and we're going to resurrect the person. I'm not talking about that. Okay, that's posh. The person's terminally ill and his heart stops. You don't go resurrect him just to live for another 5 minutes and to torture him and to torture everyone. That's posh. No. I don't think any Ravet says to do that. Can't imagine. There probably are, but. It's not mainstream. But talk about things, other things, where the person, like I've seen my own eyes, the person is really totally in a coma, and the doctors make them, and they have this shita, there's this mahalach. If it, you know, you over here, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Everyone heard that expression? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. In the hospitals, they never heard of that. That expression, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, was obliterated atomically. When they make their rounds, they have to make changes. If the patient, I used to argue that with the doctor, the patient is stable. So don't, what do you have to make changes? Just leave it the way it is. Leave it, let it be the way it is. What are you going to do today? What are you coming and tinkering with the medication? No, we have to make a change. And every one of the changes you've made so far has only made it worse. So just leave it the way it is. Shev v'altase odif. No. That's what we do. We come, I'll make our rounds for one purpose only, to make changes. In other words, to accelerate the process. Dr. Fuchter, am I saying correct or is it nonsense?
There is a nuance.
But the motivation you're giving
something.
Them is not.
I mean, a lot of things have changed. Patient autonomy led to the DNR when I was a rat. We didn't
ever. Right now, in this.
To get patients assigned to DNR.
Yeah.
It was just a sensible thing. Someone's dying and their heart stops. You don't resuscitate them if they're going to die the next day, right? But then patient autonomy required, you know, the patient's wishes. So then the patient had to sign that he's okay. Going for a DNR, do not resuscitate, right?
And what about changing, what about adding morphine? Let's talk about that.
Just for the change, this change, that I know.
You didn't see that?
You change when necessary.
No, okay, so I right. You change when necessary.
Things are good. You're not
Let's say things are bad. Patient's a coma. Things are bad. And the family says to the doctors, do nothing. And the doctor said, no, we have to give more medication.
Every story is different.
But what about adding, what about if a patient's a coma and they decide we're gonna increase the dosage of morphine? What about that?
If a patient's in coma, you know, generally the morphine is usually given for pain control, so then that's the issue.
But doesn't morphine also have a side effect? It slows the heart?
No, the respiration.
It affects
the respiration. Right? And can accelerate death. A patient who is in a comatose state, morphine can accelerate the death. If a patient is in a coma that would statistically die in 3 days, by giving a little morphine, he'll die in a day.
Theoretically.
We
don't watch it.
When the government was giving subsidies to the tobacco farmers, people used to claim that it's a conspiracy. They're giving subsidies because it shortens your life, and they can.
I don't believe that for one moment.
Save on social
I don't believe for one moment. No, I have information. Let's not go into the gory details. This pasuk in the sugya, if you take out any book, any sefer that discusses this sugya called Chaye Sha'a, they will cite you this pasuk that we learned, and that is Vayisu Es Yona Vayitiluhu El Hayam. There's no sefer Chaye Sha'a does not bring you this pasuk. And what does the pasuk say? Yonah told them, don't just throw me into the yam, throw me up. Toss me up. Because if you toss me up, it'll take 1 second until I land. And that 1 second is chaye sha'a. It's kedai. If I'm anyway going to die, let me live at least one more moment. So if you're just going to push me over into the sea, push me off the cliff, I'm going to die. If you toss me up, and then I come landing down, I'm going
to
live one more second.
You have to get him over the wall. You pick him up and you...
That's what I would say. I would like to say that, exactly. But this, I believe that's what it says. That's what they all... This is cited. I'm not joking with you. I have to tell you the source. I have to find you the source. Where it's who says this. They cite this. Maybe it's even the Chazal. I have to find you the source. But next, I have a whole kudrus on this. Chaye Sha'a from Yonah, the sugya, the halach of Chaye Sha'a, the sugya of murder, mutiny at the sea from the story of Yonah, and this pasuk is cited. Vayisu es Yonah, they lifted him up, they raised him. He gave this instruction because every moment counts. Now, there's one thing they have to take note. He was a law. He was conscience. He was in a frame of mind where he was thinking, can you apply this principle to a person who is Rachmana Litzlan in a coma? Is there a din of Chaye Sha'a regarding someone in that situation? Well, maybe not. Maybe Chaye Sha'a's only, there's an in of allowing a person to live every second more possible where he is conscious, where he can think about his purpose in this world. But a person's in a coma, he's not aware of his surroundings. Who says it applies there?
The doctors very often, when somebody is in coma and they see the heart rate going up, they interpret that as meaning the person is feeling pain and they increase the morphine. It's a very common thing.
When the heart is going up.
Heart rate's going
but
up.
Let's say the heart's stable.
Pain, that's the way they interpret.
But let's say it's stable.
I'm talking about in terms of giving morphine. I would imagine that when it's stable, they can't interpret it, they won't increase it.
They will leave
but
it.
If the heart rate
leave it
goes
be.
Up, people in coma are interpreting
okay,
that
100%.
They give more.
If the heart rate goes up, that's a signal there's
the
pain.
Feeling
that's pain. So you have to compensate. But let us say the heart rate is stable.
Depends on what else is going on. They wouldn't do it.
And let's say there's a policy policy when the heart rate is stable and the person is in a comatose state and his organs are shutting down, should they increase the morphine?
That's what the circumstances are, but generally not.
Kevorkian. Call in for Kevorkian.
Another morphine. Telling me morphine. A person is in a terminal situation and the doctor sees that the organs start
shutting down.
Should he prescribe put on the machine to clear, how is the kidney start failing?
Dialysis.
So with the dialysis, he will maybe going 3 months.
Right.
Without dialysis in 3-4 days, he's out.
Right. So that's also that's like a DNR. It's very similar to a DNR. The person naturally, you do nothing, naturally he will die. But so you're not doing anything to accelerate. But there are techniques that are available in hospices. Maybe it's more in hospice, they can get away with it probably more than in a hospital, I would imagine. I don't know. I have no idea. Every situation is different. There are some places with Pumfakert. They'll do everything possible to keep it. There are many different variables and considerations and beliefs. Every health professional has a different hashkafa, and there are other financial considerations. There are needs, and these are all issues. This is one of the sources for Chaye Shah, where he told them, don't just vayitiluhu el hayam. Rather, it really goes back to the previous passage, Pasuk Yubeis. Vayoymer alehem, sa'uni, lift me up, vahatiluni. What's that about? Vayoymer alehem, hatiluni el hayam. Throw me into the sea. Whatever it takes to get me into, what's this element of sa'uni? Delay. Delay even for a few moments. Why? Chaye Shah. What exactly does that mean? Yonah here was awake, he was alive, he was healthy, he was fully aware of his surroundings, and here he's demanding one more second. Okay?
Now he wanted 1 second less. Force me in there real quick.
Su'uni, it says. Su'uni means lift me up. So that, you know, the Pasuk doesn't need to tell you the practicalities. Doesn't tell you the practicalities. The Pasuk is not to go tell you, it's obvious. When it tells you what he ate for breakfast, does the Pasuk tell us what Yonah ate for breakfast? What they served on the ship? It doesn't say those details. It tells you every word in Nach is teaching you halacha, hashkafa, it's teaching you something. If you were given the task to write this Pasuk, Dr. Fruchter, would you write the word Sa'uni? Would you write the word Pasuk? In Pasuk Yud Beis, if you were writing the story, would you say, Vayoymer Alehem, write for me. Yonah tells the people, okay, throw me into the sea. Would you write, Yonah says to the people, lift me up and then throw me into the sea. You'd write the prescription. All right, we'll stop here. We'll continue this discussion next week.